The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Manchester United no longer joint top of the Premier League. They're all by themselves. Paul Pogba's good again. His winner gets them past Burnley in a game with some fun VAR confusion. At the bottom, Sheffield United finally win, but it's against Newcastle, so does it really count? Elsewhere, score, defend, concede, repeat. The not-so-brand new single from Jose Mourinho. Man City's good run continues, and what's going on at Wolves? Whatever it is, it's not quite as bad as what's going on at Celtic. Ewan Murray talks us through that. Plus, your questions, as always, most of which this week are about imaginary children. All that on today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Ed Ahrens, nice to see you. How are you doing?
Hi, Max. I'm good, thanks. You?
Excellent, thank you. Jackie Oatley, hi.
Hi, Max.
Welcome. And Barry Glendenning, always a pleasure.
Hello.
You all right, Baz?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Let's start at Turf Moor then. Burnley 0, Manchester United 1. United going top for the first time at this stage of the season since 2012-2013, the year they won their 20th league title. They've won 6 of their 7 away games so far. Ollie's got Pogba firing again. Good hit for the volley, took a deflection. He described Pogba as back to his best. Barry, do you need to eat some humble pie?
Why would I need to eat some humble pie?
Sure, you've suggested he should let Pogba go. And now Pogba's going to win the league for Manchester United.
I still think he should let Pogba go. He's thoroughly unreliable, has the occasional good game, but doesn't deliver anywhere near consistently enough, and seems to be a pernicious dressing room influence. I would have my suspicions about any player who has a reputation for phoning it in on a regular basis, but suddenly sparks into life during a transfer window. So, no humble pie for me today. Is it gluten-free humble pie?
it's however you want it to be, Barry. Does anyone want to disagree with Barry? I've always heard he's quite good in the dressing room, Ed.
I think he is quite a good influence in the dressing room in terms of what he's very popular anyway with a lot of the players, and he is definitely one of Man United's leaders. And it's a really difficult one. It's kind of been on a knife edge the whole time that he's been at United. Even the first time when he was a youngster, it was always like, is he really committed to be here? But I mean, it's credit to Solskjaer, I think, that he's got him. You know, he's kind of put all that stuff that's gone on in the background and potentially moving, you know, wanting to move, and Raiola's public comments, and he's managing to get a tune out of him. And really, you know, played very, very well at the week against Burnley. So I know, you know, it is like Barry says, it was a bit of a one-off. But if he can put a few performances together, you know, we're nearly halfway through the season, and if he could inspire United to the title, then I think everything would be forgiven.
But how many times has this happened before? How many good performances in a row is it going to take for me, say, to be convinced that he's anything other than a complete waste of space? I mean, I've seen how good he can be. I've seen him win a World Cup with France, and you just don't get that.
Well, that's what I mean.
If he could
put together some, you know, he has had a run of good performances, you know, half a season of playing well, and then you know, things have got in the way or something else has happened. But yeah, if he could do that now for United, I mean. Also, another thing, his value would go up, wouldn't it, for their point of view if they do want to sell him. But he's got it within him.
I think part of the problem is that he just didn't want to rejoin Manchester United in the first place. From what I was told at the time by somebody in the game who knows his agent, was that he just doesn't like Manchester, and that's not the club's fault. They wanted to sign him. He didn't have the option to go where he did want to go, so it happened that he went back to Manchester United. And I think if your heart's not in it, I mean, look at David De Gea. He wanted to leave, didn't he? And then he got a whopping great new contract and he stayed. But is he really the player that we know he can be and that he was? Well, no. And I think if your heart's not 100% in it and totally committed, I think it is probably difficult to get that kind of consistency. And the frustration with him is that we know the type of player he can be. We know the type of character, the massive personality he is. And I don't think his personality is a problem. It's just more putting all those, bits of the jigsaw together to make him a consistent performer, to be what he was for France. And I was lucky to be there at the World Cup final, watching him lifting the trophy, and should have been on top of the world, top of his game, should have been going to his club and winning all before him. But it just hasn't quite worked. And you just think, there's part of you that can't help but be a little bit cynical and think, well, he has to perform to be able to get a move elsewhere if that's what he wants. And of course, the club wants his value to be as high as possible. But the best thing he can do is win the league with Manchester United, and then the move will come in time.
I feel a sort of not a huge amount of positivity coming, you know, from the Zoom call about Manchester United when they are top of the Premier League. And like, there was no way. Well, I certainly didn't think they'd be anywhere near this a few weeks ago.
Didn't you? Oh, it's only you. The rest of us fully predicted this, Max. Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Where have you been? No, I mean, huge credit to him. But we were just talking about Pogba then, weren't we? We weren't talking about Man United not being any good. I mean, of course they have been. They've finally got that consistency. That's the key, isn't it? Because you look at them individually and you say, this team should be better. And now recently they have been. And it's the fact that they're putting a run together, the fact that they are resilient, the fact that they have such a fabulous away record and had to come from behind so many times. That bodes really well. That game over Christmas where looked to be petering out to a goalless draw against Wolves, and in stoppage time they managed to win with a deflected strike. I mean, those kind of games they wouldn't have won before. So it does bode well. And frankly, it's just quite nice as a complete neutral that everyone's so positive about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. There's not that bitterness. And it's great for the title race, so it not just to be between Liverpool and Manchester City. It's what we all want.
Harry Maguire's goal was ruled out for a shove, which seemed very harsh, but also included the greatest bit of the week of the midweek games, which was Ben Mee karate kidding himself into the back of the net. Christopher says it reminded me of that scene from Return of the Pink Panther when Peter Sellers did a flying karate kick into the kitchen. It was just so brilliant. And also there was this sort of brilliant bit of VAR, Ed, and I know people got very frustrated about it, but just, you know, Luke Shaw went in high on Goodwinson, the ref played on, Robbie Brady fouls Cavani, we're all watching it. And I don't know about you, I had absolutely no idea which way this was going to go. And I found it, and you know, neither did Gary Neville, neither did any of the commentary team. I didn't blame them at all. I eventually found it thoroughly enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't think anybody had a clue, especially not VAR. I mean, it took, I think it must have been one of the longest breaks as well. It was like 5 minutes, wasn't it? Or something like that, at least. And yeah, to the extent that the PGMOL had to release a statement afterwards to explain the decision. And how they'd come to it that Shaw had been, I think he was booked for the initial foul eventually, wasn't he? So
I thought he was a bit lucky. I thought it could have been a red for sure, but I didn't think it was a disastrous sort of resolution to that situation. But it was just quite interesting having two VAR bits in the same thing, Barry.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I thought they probably reached the right decision in the end. Possibly would have given Shaw a red, but it was certainly orange, if not red. But Robbie Brady had his yellow rescinded, but Edison Cavani's injury wasn't rescinded, and he wasn't allowed back onto the pitch to defend the free, because he had to go off the pitch for treatment and wasn't allowed back on to defend the subsequent free kick from the Luke Shaw tackle on Joey Goodmanson. So I thought that was a bit unfair, because he should have been allowed on. If Burnley had scored there from with a free man that should have been marked by Cavani, that would have given rise to yet more outrage. But yeah, it was kind of interesting.
PCB Enthusiast says, the Luke Shaw incident got me thinking, and I came up with a scenario reminiscent of the Wilson scenario. Okay, so you have to concentrate on this. A team is chasing a goal with seconds left, right? A player goes down outside the box, but the referee waves play on, and the opposition kick it downfield as the game's about to end. In that scenario, it would be advantageous for the team chasing the goal to purposely score an own goal or concede a penalty as fast as possible, so VAR could check to see if there was a foul in the build-up and eventually give them the free kick, giving them one last chance to score an equaliser.
Well, yeah. I mean, the problem with this is, as soon as VAR came in, and I was studying it far too closely for the Women's World Cup. All those different scenarios come up. And I spoke to a former top ref who said the one real issue that's going to make everybody scream is when something like this happens, is when there's an issue at one end, which can't be stopped in itself for VAR. The, you know, play's continued, it's gone up the other end, the other team score, and one set of fans going absolutely delirious. Those were the days when we had fans. And it has to be brought back. So it just has to be accepted that as part of VAR, you are going to get one of those issues whereby you're celebrating or furious about one particular decision, and actually it comes back to something that happened a minute or so earlier on. But that's just how it is. That's part of the joy.
I'm surprised we haven't had more of those instances where a team scored a goal at one end and then, you know, that a VAR check has had to disallow it. It's hard. I mean, there's been the odd one, but
I was at the Nations League final where I think it was Switzerland and Portugal, where Switzerland thought they got a penalty. It wasn't given. It went down the other end and Bernardo Silva was fouled, so Portugal got a penalty. The ball's on the spot. The ref goes to look at the monitor and then takes the ball from one spot to the other spot and gives Switzerland a penalty.
Amazing drama. I mean,
as a neutral, it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
But I guess the idea is, take that Shaw incident. If Burnley are losing and then there's that foul by Luke Shaw and it's the last minute and they think, well, we need a free kick to put it in the box, Robbie Brady might as well just pump the ball into his own net, because at least then the ref has to go and check on the Luke Shaw thing and give him a free kick. I'd love to see that. Anyway, look,
you're assuming that's what's going to actually happen, because that's been the problem with VAR. You think, oh, well, VAR will check it and do the obvious thing, but it hasn't always been the case this season, has it?
It does set it up perfectly for Liverpool Manchester United at the weekend, doesn't it, Jackie?
Absolutely beautifully. I think all of us are looking forward to this, whoever you support. I mean, it'd be nice if they could delay the first half by 45 minutes or so I can get back from Chelsea women against Man United, because their Man United are also top of the league, by the way, Casey Stoney's women's side. But yeah, United looking for their first win in five against Liverpool. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer hasn't beaten Liverpool as Manchester United manager. At the fact that Liverpool unbeaten in 67 home league games and they've scored in the last 42 at Anfield. There are so many stats there you look at and think, well, if ever Manchester United are going to burst that bubble, it's going to be this weekend. Marcus Rashford loves scoring against Liverpool. He's scored three in his last four. And all the different ingredients to it. The fact that Liverpool aren't scoring as frequently as we're used to them. Just seven shots on target in the last three games and haven't scored in two of the last three. So it does feel, though, as though this is the moment for Manchester United to really stamp their authority. But then when you build these games as something such as that, and now is the time and this is the one, it usually plays out to be a bit of a nil-nil damp squib, but hopefully it'll live up to the billing, because it's certainly one, it's something for us all to look forward to at the moment, quite frankly, when we can't do a great deal else.
Yeah, I think Liverpool might have an advantage here, given that they've got the experience of these games. You know, they've played so many of these games over the last few years that they were the top of the table showdowns. But obviously their form has been very, very bad recently, and so especially more worryingly, I think, for Klopp, the front three who've all been around and playing, that they just haven't been clicking at all. So yeah, it's a really intriguing one to see how Solskjaer is going to approach it as well, because you know, going to Anfield, as Jackie mentioned, that it's such a tough place to win. I mean, only Crystal Palace have won there in the last 4 years.
You say with a smile on your face.
And we won't be able to say that for much longer. So I am genuinely looking forward to this one, and it should be. I think you know, the Tottenham Liverpool game earlier in the season, that was one that everyone was looking forward to for different reasons. You know, the tactical battle, and here the tactical battle is going to be slightly different, but hopefully with a few more attacking players on show. But you know, these two have had quite a few nil-nil draws of late as well, so it's always wary of that happening too. But yeah, hopefully we'll get an early goal.
Sheffield United 1, Newcastle 0. The Blades won the 18th time of asking. Only Bolton in 1902-03 played more games of a season before earning their first win. Following their FA Cup victory at the weekend, they're on a roll. We looked as though we had our identity back. That was us, says Chris Wilder. We can't waste this chance because we've been after a result like this for a long time. Tom says, after Barry rightly predicted Sheffield United's win, does he have any more predictions for this weekend? And if he does tell me to lump on it, will he receive a 10-week ban from the pod? I hope not. They played very well, Barry, didn't they, Sheffield United?
They did. You should probably add the caveat that, you know, I appreciate you can only beat what's in front of you, but Newcastle were absolutely pathetic. And the way they approached the game was awful. I mean, I think that should almost be a sacking offence to set up that negatively against the worst team in the Premier League, arguably the worst team in Premier League history. But there you go. And I would imagine Newcastle fans were absolutely furious, but let's not rain on Sheffield United's parade. They, I thought, thoroughly deserved the win. Penalty they got was a little bit contentious, and they were arguably lucky that Billy Sharp didn't get sent off not too long after coming on for raking down Fabian Schär's Achilles. But yeah, it was a very good performance. They've built, as I suspected they would, they built on the momentum of that cup win on Saturday, however laboured it might have been. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of effect it has on their confidence. I would still give them a small prayer of staying up, but they need to put together a run of wins, and whether or not they'll be able to do that remains to be seen.
Finnegan says, seeing as they lost to both Derby in 07-08 and Sheffield United this season, should Newcastle be banned from playing football? There was a daft red card from Ryan Fraser. Richard Jolly saying Ryan Fraser becomes the shortest player ever to be sent off in the Premier League, replacing Tarek Lamptey. I couldn't believe that Ryan Fraser was shorter than Tarek Lamptey. I'd like to see them put back-to-back to be absolutely sure of that. I enjoyed Ollie McBurney, who wasn't playing for Sheffield United, tweeting a minute after the red card, Rizza's been sent off for that Barnet. but, I mean, you're right, Barry. And we, you know, praise for Sheffield United. But, Jackie, Newcastle were, I mean, stinkingly bad.
Yes, the results are now matching the performances, I think their fans would probably say. It is a real, real worry. No win in eight in all competitions. They've only beaten West Brom at home since November. And the goals, I mean, they signed such a good goal scorer and they did some really good business in the summer, but one goal from open play in seven games, and the negativity as well. I mean, everybody on Tyneside is looking at the manager, and it's not because they want to dislike the bloke. It's nothing personal.
I think it is.
Well, I don't think they want to dislike him. I think they want to win football matches and they want to be near the top of the league and they want to be enjoying what they're seeing. They want primarily to be heading in the right direction. And that's the problem, is that they haven't been heading in the right direction. They've been playing some awful football and the fans aren't daft. I mean, they're really, really not. They know what they can see. And what they're seeing is the fact that they're just not very good at football and not heading. But the leadership from top to bottom, we all know about that club. But the fact that you do have to worry about them being one of those clubs that gets dragged in, you really do. I mean, at least Sheffield United, yes, are in a dreadful position. They're going to have to put together a massive run of games. They're going to have to somehow find goals. They're only averaging one goal every two games. Nowhere near enough to stay in the Premier League. But Newcastle United, absolutely one of those clubs that could get sucked into it.
I thought it was interesting after the game that Steve Bruce went on this impassioned rant about the injustice of the decisions that went against Newcastle. And notable among his grumbles was the fact that the penalty was given by someone sitting in a room 300 miles away, as if they were like watching the game through a telescope or something rather than on a big screen with slow motion replays and whatnot. But he can't possibly think he's fooling anyone with that kind of rhetoric. They deserve to lose that game. They went to Sheffield United, like Sheffield United, who had not won a single game out of 17 league matches, and set up for a 0-0 draw. That is unforgivable.
I was going to say, even Roy Hodgson tried to beat Sheffield United a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, I think Sam Maximan being, you know, he's had some problems with COVID, hasn't he? And he's hardly played this season. I think that's massive. Newcastle, you know, it was amazing for them last season.
It's weird because I thought they gave it a go against Liverpool and got a result. I thought they gave it a go in the cup against Arsenal. I sort of saw
they're quite good. You know, in the rear guard and trying to shut up shop. And Bruce has got, and they've got some reasonably good defenders. And even with Lascelles, who's also been missing for a while with COVID, They've got a solid unit there, so they can do that. But when it comes to, you know, going to a team like Sheffield United, where you've got to go on the front foot against a team like that, otherwise, you're asking for trouble, really, aren't you? So, yeah, it's a very really worrying time for them, especially, you know, we don't want to bring it all, rake it all back up, but with the failed Saudi takeover earlier in the season, obviously the Newcastle fans have had a glimpse of what might have been. They're almost like it's a lot worse than ever, in a way. You know, they've got Steve Bruce as manager. They're plummeting down the table. They almost were one of England's, you know, big hitters again, and they're not. So it's
and now they're playing Joel Linton left wing. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Part two will begin at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Ram says, what's more boring, Ben Fisher parking his car or Jose parking his bus? there were some, pre-game chat between Scott Parker and Jose. Parker saying it was scandalous that Fulham had to play this game. Jose said Fulham should apologise if they turned up with a full team on the pitch. Look, Spurs can't defend a lead. This is the fifth game they've dropped points from a winning position. And, you know, that's 10 points against teams, against Newcastle, as just discussed, West Ham, where they were three up, Palace, Wolves, you know, and this game against Fulham. Jackie, what do you make of it?
Well, it comes from the manager, doesn't it? It comes from the fact that they want to hang on to what they've got. And it's completely at odds with the Tottenham ethos. I mean, we've all grown up with Tottenham being an exciting attacking side, thoroughly enjoyable to watch. You know, when you're going to stick them on a Sunday afternoon, that they're going to entertain you pretty much one way or another. And the Mourinho ethos is, well, if you're 1-0 up, well, that's going to lead to 3 points if you don't do anything daft. But obviously it hasn't worked out that way. And their approach to some of those games is, must be so frustrating for Spurs supporters, because they know the team they've got. They know the talent they've got in that side. So to not have the right mentality to be able to defend properly, but also use their attacking strengths, which are considerable, as we all know. And those games, West Ham, Wolves, Newcastle, Fulham, Palace, Liverpool. But I'm intrigued as to why he's so reluctant to put on Gareth Bale. What's the situation there? 4 Premier League appearances in 5 months. He's not played 90 minutes. He's only played more than half a game once, and that was at West Bromwich Albion. Okay, so he didn't arrive in tip-top fitness, but it's not exactly working out as planned, is it?
I don't think Bale has looked sort of necessarily fit enough. I might be right. I mean, I'm watching that game yesterday thinking, look, Dele Alli played well at the weekend. Bring Dele Alli on. It's what's weird, Ed, is they create and create and create until they score. So yesterday they created and Areola made some good saves and then they scored. Against Wolves, they created for 1 minute and scored and then they stopped creating.
Yeah, it's almost like he's trying to prove people wrong, Mourinho, in that, you know, I can win the league with this like retro Inter Milan approach, you know, from 2010. But yeah, I was going to bring up Dele Alli as well, and it was really like it was a pointed rejection yesterday, wasn't it, to leave him on the bench in that situation after, I know it was only against Marine, but he was outstanding, wasn't he, in that game, and looks like the player we all know he can be. And his Instagram post after the game, I don't know if anyone's seen this of him.
No, what do you say?
It doesn't say anything. It's just a bemused looking Dele. Yeah, just his story after the game, and there's talk this morning that there may be some disciplinary action after it. He's just looking very unhappy in his Instagram post. And yeah, you have to have a bit of sympathy for him, really, because we've been told, you know, we did a story last week with Dave Heitner, I did it with him. Tottenham don't want him to go on loan this month, so any chance of him leaving this month is going to be a transfer, which doesn't seem very likely either. And, you know, in terms of getting in the England team, the Euros do happen. It's not looking great for him, really. So, yeah, and I think that is at the root of Tottenham's problem. But there's obviously a breakdown between him and Mourinho that he doesn't quite trust him.
It would seem a bit Irish if Dele Alli was to get punished for posting a pointed Instagram story when his manager has of late become the king of the pointed Instagram story.
It was a lovely. I mean, Spurs' goal was beautiful. You know, Højbjerg's pass is brilliant. Reguilón brings it down perfectly. The cross is great. Kane's header is superb. Not many diving headers. Are there fewer diving headers these days? Or is that just people thinking that the halcyon days of football was just Keith Houchin, just horizontal, constantly heading the ball in? I don't know. But Fulham, on the other hand, Jackie, look really, in the second half, they look really good. They look like the better team. They kept the ball. They moved it quickly. Anguissa's a lovely player. You know, Lookman made such a difference as well.
Yeah, huge credit to them for it as well. Unbeaten in five now. And you just get the feeling that any team who's playing Tottenham that concedes a goal is absolutely not going to give up, are they? They're going to think, well, we know what they're going to do. So we're going to step up our game. And we've got a very good chance, if we keep pushing, that we'll get a late equaliser. And that's exactly what happened. And a huge credit as well to Lookman. Beautiful cross, wasn't it? I mean, OK, you can criticise defending, but let's not. Let's just say what a beautiful cross it was. Fine work from him on the left. And a wonderful, wonderful header from Ivan Cavallero. I've never seen him do that before. I've seen him score some spectacular goals, but not like that with his head. And huge credit to Scott Parker as well. We know that he was fuming about the lack of notice, although he was told on the Saturday it could have been a possibility. It was confirmed 9:30 a.m. on the Monday morning. They had 10 COVID tests. Some players only had a day or two to prepare. So all in all, I think that bodes very, very well for them that they've got that team spirit. Because you know when they went down a couple years ago, they just collapsed like a pack of cards. But their recruitment's been so much better. Scott Parker's got them united as a side, as a team. And I think the relegation battle this season is going to be absolutely fascinating, because whilst Sheffield United can't score goals at the moment, if they can sort that out, they've already got the team spirit. We don't know what Big Sam's going to do yet at West Brom. He's talking about bringing in new players in January. We see what Newcastle are doing, heading the other way. And Fulham, with the ability they've got in the side, with good manager, with team spirit, it could be an absolutely brilliant relegation battle.
Yeah, and Brighton are in that as well. And we'll get on to them in just a second. It's just worth noting that while Spurs, you know, let in another late equaliser, Mauricio Pochettino won his first trophy last night. Neymar and Icardi scoring in a 2-1 win over Marseille in the French Super Cup. So well done to Poch. Perhaps it all worked out for him.
It's probably worth noting as well that Tottenham seem to have been the only team that played during the week who adhered in some way to the social distancing at goal celebrations, which politicians have been using as their latest smokescreen to try to mask their own hideous shortcomings. You could choreograph quite a funny goal celebration. You know, use this time to inject a bit of imagination into your socially distant goal celebration.
They could bring back the Chelsea one. Do you remember when they used to do the picture? They used to stop for a pose for a picture, and then Dennis Wise was lying on the floor and stuff. Yeah.
Or maybe follow my leader, you know. Or somebody suggested on Twitter that they all do the Ronaldo one, but to different cameras, and then the director could cut it up perfectly.
What about the Aylesbury Ducks celebration? Do you remember
them? Yes.
They could do that. That's socially distanced, isn't it?
Could you do a socially distanced oops upside your head? It's one for the kids there.
There's so many options. You can't do it. Charles, shaking hands, but from a distance and saluting them instead.
Or you could just do like Brighton and not score goals.
Well, let's go on to them.
I was going to say Barry, but you know, left it to you.
Yeah. Well, look, they lost to Manchester City. I thought Brighton played really well in this game. And I don't know what you think, Ed. I just thought they were... I thought a bit intricate in, you know, they just never put the ball in the box. So they get into positions where you could cross it, and it's weird that they, you know, they're sort of more Wenger than Wenger in trying to pass it in.
But yeah, every time you watch them, it's the same. And every time that someone talks about them, they say the same thing as well. It must be quite frustrating for Brighton fans, because I've seen them quite a few times in the last couple of years, and they can be really good to watch. And you think, there's some great players out there, you know, Bissouma's be very consistent, and they have lots of good players, but they just don't seem to put the ball in the net. I think he maybe is going to have to change and take a few more risks as the season goes on, depending on their situation. Because, you know, two games they've won all season, eight draws, it's asking for them to be sucked in as well. And, you know, with Fulham improving steadily under Parker, you can see Brighton being right down there again, like they were the last couple of seasons. Really,
I find it strange.
I desperately don't want Brighton to go down. It would just be the way they play, the philosophy of the manager. I mean, Pep Guardiola alluded to it when he said that he might be the best English manager, and he says it helps the world game for a team to play like that. And I know it's easy to say just after you've beaten them, but they are so good in everything else apart from arguably the most important bit, which is putting the ball in the net. And they'll be frustrated they used up three of their season's goals in a draw against Wolves coming back from 3-1 down. So they've got so much going for them, and I really, really, really want to see Graham Potter do well. He's clearly a very good manager. It's just that issue of scoring a few more goals, which a lot of clubs in the Premier League have got issues with. But I really don't want to see them down there, because I want it to be proved right that what he's doing is the right thing. And, you know, I don't want people to be going, oh, well, he hasn't got many more points than Chris Hughton, and look at what happened. It's totally different. Brighton fans would love watching their team now compared to in those days. I don't want to speak for them, but I'm imagining, because they're so much more progressive. They've got much more going for them. And I really want to see them heading in the right direction.
Jackie, who do you desperately want to go down?
Oh, I'm not answering that, but you know one of them. No, I don't. No, anybody who's overly defensive for the sake of it, doesn't have the right approach to the games, anyone who's particularly cynical, I don't really care in terms of club names. I really, really don't.
West Brom, Newcastle and Spurs, that's who you want to go down?
No. I think we could all handpick our favourites, but I'm definitely not going there. But anyone who, again, coming back to the when you see a team being live on a Sunday afternoon when you want to sit down and watch a match, whoever they are, you want there to be some fun involved, whether they concede a load or score a load, and just not somebody who packs a load of players behind the ball with no ambition whatsoever.
If, say for the sake of argument, Graham Potter keeps Brighton up, but Tony Bloom, the owner, decides it's not really working out and let him go, do you think Potter has done enough in his time at Brighton to say get himself another big-ish job in, say, Championship or Premier League job in English football?
I'd say so.
I don't think he has.
Oh, I think he has. I think it's certainly like in a similar level, Premier League or top of the Championship, because like Jackie said, he's shown he has a plan and it's pretty successful. Well,
it's not that successful.
I don't know. I think the interesting thing about Brighton that I was going to mention is that their recruitment, and I was talking to Jacob Steinberg about this the other day, actually, and their recruitment is quite interesting because it's often people you've not heard of. So, but then how many of them have actually worked out? So they've spent some money on some players that, yeah, like Jahan Bakr, for example, who looks like he's quite good, but for whatever reason, it hasn't really worked out for him. But, you know, so I think that's an interesting one, whether Potter, if he did get another job, had a bit more, how much say he has in the recruitment, I don't know.
You know, it's so easy in football to be knee-jerk and see what somebody's done on Saturday or Sunday and how they're going to do this weekend, and rather than looking at the bigger picture. And I think with Graham Potter at Brighton, you can see a bigger picture, and that's a wonderful thing in football, if you can see a club that is heading in the right direction. Okay, the result's not necessarily showing that because they're not quite knitting in the final third. Not quite scoring enough goals, but I don't think they're that far away. And I hope he stays there for years, and I hope he establishes them as at least a top 10 Premier League side.
I have to admit, actually, quickly on Potter, it was during the last season's game at Selhurst Park. I'm a Palace fan, but I was reporting on the game, showing no bias at all. But I have to admit that during that game, you know, Brighton completely outplayed Palace, and then Palace got a draw in the end, but it was, I had the impression that, you know, Brighton were going in a direction with a young manager who knows what he wants to do, whereas Palace are sort of quite a regressive football team and don't, you know, even now Palace are doing okay this season, but what direction are they heading in? And it's kind of, in a way, I know Brighton are further down the table and I wouldn't want to swap that, but at least they're kind of heading in a direction that you can see what they want to do. Whereas with Hodgson, he knows what he wants to do, but how long can Palace continue with the oldest manager that the Premier League's ever seen?
Ed, how many topics of conversation had you exhausted before you got onto Brighton's recruitment with Jacob Steinberg?
Oh, it was a crazy night, Max. Crazy night.
Now, we should mention Phil Foden scored a lovely goal, didn't he? He's their top scorer in all competitions with 8. De Bruyne's got 14 assists in all competitions, more than anyone else. And Raheem's penalty miss was fun. Percy Tau playing for Brighton. I got in touch with Richard Jolly, who said, I don't think a Percy's won the league since Percy Smith with Blackburn in 1914 or the FA Cup since Percy Paravicini for Old Etonians in 1882. Carrie got in touch to say it was a double Percy League winning side, with Percy Dawson having joined Blackburn in 1914 for a record fee. And thanks to Adam Hurry, who said, thanks to Percy Tau, steam trains number 1 to 11 from the original Thomas the Tank Engine lineup have now all been represented in the Premier League, except for number 8, Duck.
On the subject of Percy's winning the league, is your friend and mine Perry Groves?
That's a good question.
Is he a Percival?
Shall I text him now and see if he gets in touch before the end of the pod?
Please do.
Okay, let's do that. Is your name Perry or Percy?
No, is it short for Percival? Not.
Wikipedia says it's just Perry.
I've asked Perrington. Perry Groves, and I'll leave my phone on, so if it beeps, we'll know that Perry Groves has got in touch at some point during that. And whatever we're doing on the pod, we'll stop it there to get his response. One tick, it's not even gone to two ticks, let alone blue ticks. So we'll see what happens. Wolves Everton. Now, look, Jackie, you're here. You watch every minute of Wolves. So apologies to Everton fans if we go a bit Wolves-centric on this. What's happening to you lot?
Ah, well, I'll try and keep it concise. It's tricky, but basically they didn't have a pre-season at all, bearing in mind they reached the quarterfinals of the Europa League last season. They have had a dreadful run of injuries, something that they've not experienced before. Last season, if you go to premierinjuries.com, a fabulous league table of Premier League injuries, you'd never guess. They were never on it. They were just not on it. They didn't have these things. And of course, Raul Jimenez with that horrific skull fracture in November. And the fact that they've lost several other players through injury as well. Johnny with an ACL, Bolly's out, Pedence is out. Various players really costing them. The fact that they sold by design Matt Doherty to Tottenham and Jota to Liverpool, which in itself wasn't an issue because they replaced them. But those injuries have hampered them. And I think one of the key issues is the fact that they started the season by design, Nuno's choice, with one senior striker, which personally I find absolutely extraordinary. They signed an 18-year-old who just turned 18 in July for £35 million, Fabio Silva from Porto, who had only started one league game in his entire career. He started one league goal in his career, so I wouldn't define that as senior. But Nuno didn't want any other backup. And sure enough, when David Luiz came thundering into Raul Jimenez's head at a set piece, unintentional, but still, he's out presumably for the season. And now they're scrabbling around trying to score goals, and they're really struggling to, and totally unlike them, they're conceding so many goals. No clean sheet in 11 since Palace at home in October, and one win in 8, that was against Chelsea, since that Raul Jimenez fracture, skull fracture at Arsenal in November. So it is a combination of factors. Nuno switching to four at the back and they're looking less sure. They've got a right back and a left back who are decent offensively, but four not so great defensively. And if you were being really critical, you could say that they'd spent £72 million in the summer on a right back and a striker, right back who's not great defensively and a striker who can't score goals. So in a nutshell, there's your problem.
How concerned are you? Nag says, I'll be disappointed if you don't discuss with the Queen of Codsall the most important derby match this weekend, hashtag Black Country Derby. It's a big game for you lot now, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it's huge for both clubs, but West Brom are very much taking the sting out of it by going, oh, we're terrible. I mean, you know, you should be beating us type thing, not putting any pressure on themselves. But for Wolves fans, it's absolutely massive. They haven't played since Mick McCarthy's final game before getting the sack, a 5-1 home defeat nearly 9 years ago. And it's a massive rivalry, one the rest of the country never talks about, doesn't really have a clue about, doesn't really understand. But Wolves against West Brom is massive. It's bitter, it's nasty, it's been really horrible over the years. I've been to many of them, and it will be different. A lot of these players from Portugal, from Morocco, from France, do they really know what a Black Country derby is? Do they need to know? Maybe it's best that they don't, as long as they frankly win that game, and all the issues that they've had recently with injuries, with conceding goals, the frustration that's been involved with it. It'll all go out the window if they beat West Brom on Saturday lunchtime. Managed, of course, by a Wolverhampton Wanderers fan in Sam Allardyce, who now reckons that he used to go to one club one week and the other. But no, he's a self-confessed Wolves fan and just adds an extra element of spice to it.
Jackie, if you're at Molyneux watching a game like that and Wolves are 2 or 3 nil down, I have it in my head that you just go full-on Wolverhampton when you're shouting abuse at referees and players and match officials and whatnot.
I don't do that, Barold. I think you know, my love.
No, I reckon any sense of decorum just goes out the window.
Well, I can't account for what I might have said or done when I was in the away end at the Hawthorns when Ewan Roberts completed his hat-trick right in front of the several thousand Wolves fans. But no, I mean, it's weird because when I'm working on those games and I've commentated for Five Live on a Black Country derby, I had no problem with it at all. No allegiance whatsoever, straight down the centre. Genuinely don't have any issues working on games for and against, goals for and against, not an issue at all. But obviously, if you're in the crowd as a fan, it might be a little bit different. But
what did you make of Everton, Jackie, in that game?
Yeah, well, they did extremely well. They were compact. They didn't have a recognised striker on the bench. They had no Dominic Calvert-Lewin. They had Richarlison on the bench. And they were set up to be compact, to try not to concede. And it was a brilliant team performance in terms of the way Ancelotti set them up, the team spirit. They totally followed his game plan to perfection. He didn't have much time to formulate one. They only had sort of a few minutes, if you like, to really put a plan into action for that game. And what a wonderful cross from Gomez, it has to be said, from the left-hand side for the keen header. Really was a wonderful cross, just as Lookman's was for Fulham at Tottenham as well. And a Wolf switched off for the opening goal. Awful from Semedo as Dean picked up the ball on the left. And then, you know, really good finish from Alex Iwobi, but he was left again by the Wolves midfielders. But full credit to them for that. There was a bit of an incident which wasn't picked up on any of the highlights reels, which has got me into a lot of trouble on social media for simply highlighting that that there seemed to be an elbow by Yerry Mina in the 93rd minute from a Wolves corner on Kiana Hoover, and VAR apparently did a quick check and waved it away. But some ex-Premier League referees have said yes, it should have been a penalty. And yeah, and my inbox yesterday was quite interesting from Everton fans suggesting it wasn't. But it's just a debate. It'd be nice if we could just mention these things on social media and say, maybe this should have been a penalty, and someone go, oh, not for me, Clive. That would be it, wouldn't it? Not for me, Clive. Get back in the kitchen, love. And here's a picture of a vacuum cleaner. But
I noticed that. I saw as well Flo got some horrendous abuse as well for suggesting Charlie Austin wouldn't bring much to the QPR party.
I love Flo for that, because what she did the next day after he'd scored was she screenshotted her own tweet and took the mickey out of herself. But that perfect. I mean, most people would just hide, delete. Okay, I never said that, you know. It's not like he scored 10 goals between now and the end of the season already. He scored a goal and, you know, fair play to him. Great win, wasn't it, against Luton? But yeah, take the mickey out of yourself, absolutely. It's just, if people could just have a nice heated debate on football, get aerated, that's fine. It's just not possible, is it?
Men are allowed to make predictions and say things which don't come off. Women are not allowed to do that. That's the key in all of this, I think.
Apparently we've never jumped in football using our arms or something like that. Oh dear, I did. Never mind. Not the end of the world.
Yeah, before we finish part two, it's come to our attention that some of you were served adverts in recent episodes from a betting company. As you can imagine, that came as quite a surprise when we were informed, especially as one listener pointed out following our special on the relationship between football and gambling. Upon investigation, we discovered it was an error made by the company that serves our podcast adverts. Unfortunately, this particular one slipped through the net. Even though only a handful of you heard the ads, we thought it was appropriate to let you know. It was quickly picked up. It's since been resolved. We've been reassured it won't happen again, and it was nothing to do with us. So just wanted to clarify that. And we'll be back in a minute. You and Murray will join us about the goings-on at Celtic. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Samuel writes, you know it's been a big week in Scotland when Ewan gets drafted in for Fitbar Corner. Ewan Murray, hello.
How are you, Max?
I'm excellent and probably doing better than anyone connected with Celtic, I would suggest. You wrote in the paper that Celtic's plasticine empire is collapsing amid arrogance and awful decisions, the latest one of which being this very ill-advised trip to Dubai. I mean, it's a catalogue of you wrote it down, like this ridiculous list of things that have happened.
Yeah, catalogue is a good way of describing it. I mean, I should say, I'm always conscious of being kind of pompous and pious about the behaviour of football clubs. I should say that, you know, immediately before Celtic went to Dubai, there wasn't a massive outcry from me or other journalists about the fact they were going. I think a few of us raised eyebrows and said, that could be problematic. But then it becomes very problematic, and immediately the club doubled down on what they did, seemed to think there was nothing wrong with what they did, until last night when Peter Lawwell, the chief executive, came out and issued an apology to supporters with some kind of faff and noise afterwards, but he did apologise. So there's so many strands to this that you know, one, in a health perspective, why would you invite that element of risk by going to Dubai in the new year when things everywhere were kind of escalating? There are the optics of it, and I hate, don't like using that word, it's a new word that everyone seems to use, but it just looked crass, especially towards Celtic. I mean, the issue again isn't myself or the press or Scottish football. Celtic's own supporters have been infuriated by this. They've underperformed this season. People are stuck in their houses. It's emerged this morning that Celtic have furloughed their under-18 squad, which in isolation is okay, but not when you're jetting off in a charter plane to a 5-star hotel in Dubai for a training camp that really is pretty needless. And then we have the other element, which is the SPFL, the league, who not only allowed this trip to happen, but they moved the fixture with Hibs, due to take place on Saturday, to Monday, to actually facilitate it. They messed about with fixtures to let this happen, and Celtic all the while hold games in hand. So it's been a disaster, a public relations disaster for Celtic, a public relations disaster for the SPFL, and it, you know, what you said, it kind of sums up the catastrophic nature of Celtic's season, really.
So that's mad. So basically they said to the league, we're having a little holiday, can you move one of our games? I mean, that is like, you know, like in my league, you're allowed to move one fixture a season, but that's ludicrous.
This originally came up in November. I think Celtic's initial plan was to go to Turkey, and that was in November. And as I say, even at that point, Celtic, they now hold three games in hand. They had two games in hand. And the league are always very uptight about fixture scheduling. So not only did the league say, yes, you can go on this training break, but they knocked out a midweek, last midweek, because Celtic were in Dubai, and they moved this game with Hibs. Hibs were furious about it from Saturday to Monday, which knocked out this midweek for Celtic. So the league were manoeuvring games to allow them to go, when the first point, I would argue, and I think anyone reasonable would argue, the first thing the league should have said was, hang on, you have a backlog of games to play. You should play them first, and then we can look at, you know, skipping abroad for training camps. The whole thing has been a disaster. And we should say, there are contributory factors here. One, Celtic are 21 points behind Rangers in the league. We have to be honest, if Celtic were 21 points in front of Rangers, their own supporters would be far less concerned about this. But the fact is, they're underperforming. And that just elevates the level of noise around it, really.
What do you think the fallout will be?
Well, I've felt for a while, I've felt since before Christmas, that there's inevitable change coming at Celtic. It seems like, a bit like before Brendan Rodgers arrived, the club needs a reboot. So I think in the summer there will be managerial change higher up the club. I just think they're kind of drifting along for now and need to kickstart things. Again, primarily for their own supporters who from behind a, you know, a laptop with a streaming code watching games have been angered by what they've seen this season. And this season is important to them. They were going for a 10th title in succession. That's a big deal to Celtic. We can't underplay that. And they've just lost their way. And as I say, the Dubai thing, you know, you end up with 13 players in isolation. The manager can't be in the dugout for the game against Hibs. If they'd come out after that and said, look, we're sorry, this was a real miscalculation, we shouldn't have gone, I think people would have eased off on them, but they didn't. Gavin Strachan, who was left in the dugout, said, oh, our only regret is that a player tested positive. Scott Brown, the captain, defended it. The club, in their own statement, which said the players had to isolate, really defended what they did and said, oh, well, this could happen in Scotland. So So what that depicts is a culture of arrogance, as I wrote, which says, well, we're used to getting our own way, and no one tells us that we can't do this or we can't do that. And it's an indication of how strong the backlash was against that, that by last night the chief executive had to come out and say, no, hands up, we do apologise.
Hello, Max here. Not at home, so excuse the audio quality, but important to say that at the time the Celtic fixture was changed, Ian Blair, the league's director of operations, said, quote, as has been the case for the past 22 years, SPFL policy, where two clubs do not agree about a fixture change and in the absence of any other relevant factor, is to favour the home club. Celtic have released a statement saying that they applied the same rigorous protocols used for pre-season training camps, UEFA match travel and for all domestic match arrangements in Scotland. Now back to me, hopefully in better audio quality.
While we're on Scotland, a few listeners rightly pointed out that on our Brexit special, which I enjoyed more than I think I thought I would, we didn't really cover Scotland. I got back in touch with Miles and Jonathan. Ewan, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but for this window, they won't have the point system that will be in the English leagues. They'll have the panel system in place. And for the summer window, it's a sort of big unknown at the moment. And then the two sort of long-term questions: will Scotland push for independence and rejoin the EU, and what implications that would have? And from a and from a footballing point of view, you know, will academy players in Scottish clubs become a prime target for Premier League clubs? That could be a sort of interesting part of it. Does that, I don't know, Ewan, if this is an area of your expertise as well, but does that...
Well, I get enough grief for speaking about Celtic. You know, you want to speak to me about the Scottish independence debate. Thanks for that. All I would say on that, you're right, it's been pushed back to the summer. Scotland's, I mean, obviously, Scotland's criteria for players coming in, if I have this right, certainly for non-EU players previously, obviously it's not as strict as it would be in England because the standard of football was lower, so it is slightly easier to get players to Scotland. So yes, I could see that being a window of opportunity for English clubs. The other possibility is someone could just buy a Scottish club and use it as some kind of tool to get players into the UK. I don't think that's...
Isn't that what Celtic is?
No comment.
Finally, Ewan, before we let you go, Kenny says, have you seen Shankland's goal yet? Brilliant goal, Dundee United, from the halfway line.
Fantastic. 52 yards, did I see it was officially. Shankland's a funny one because he was absolutely prolific in the Scottish lower leagues. There was high hopes when he got in the Scotland squad. Dundee United valued him at £3 million or more. There was high hopes for him this season. I think he'd only scored 2 goals and he looked as if his confidence was really low, and then he bangs one in from the halfway line against St Johnstone on Tuesday night. It was a fantastic goal and deserves all the wider recognition that it's received.
I presume I'm not the first person to say he certainly didn't shank that one. It was better than Beckham's, if you ask me, because the ball's moving, and you know the hard thing about that strike is, you know, if the ball's coming across you, it's much harder to hit it so cleanly. Yeah, so go and look at it. It's a brilliant goal. Ewan, thanks very much. Thanks for sorting out Celtic and Scottish independence. Look forward to your Twitter mentions.
I'm off to board up my windows. Thank you.
Cheers. Ewan Murray there, our Scottish football correspondent. Let's look ahead to the Premier League games. Obviously, Arsenal Palace tonight. That game will have probably happened before you listen to this podcast. We've talked about Liverpool United and Wolves West Brom. The Villa-Everton game is off. That's the third Villa game to be postponed. You just don't know when, Ed, they're going to fit them in. I mean, we're all sort of clinging on, hoping that football continues, brackets, if it's safe, and thinking, you know, that at some point, something has to give.
Yeah, I think we're in terms of Villa, that they're obviously in a bit of a predicament now with 3 games to play. But the rest of the league is just about muddling on, I think, as it stands. If there's not too many more postponements, then I think that they're going to be okay. But it's getting to the stage with, you know, the knock-on effects of certain teams having games called off is going to really start extending the season, and the pressure's going to grow on the Euros. I think that's the thing that might have to move if this continues anymore. But yeah, hopefully they can muddle through and keep it going, I think, because it's in everybody's interest to do that.
But the thing about Villa Everton is you can kind of squeeze that in anywhere because neither of them are playing in Europe, so it's not that big a deal. Spurs, that's going to be tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, Tottenham have got a particular, I think, that and Manchester City, but they're kind of getting through their backlog a bit more. But yeah, Tottenham in particular, it's not looking great for them in the next couple of months. But
at high level amateur football, if you play double headers, where you have 2 hour-long games spread 15 minutes apart, 6 points on a day. I am all in favour of the Premier League just doing that. Just saying, look, if you've got to play a team twice still, just you play them twice in a day. You can change your teams, do everything. That'd be absolutely brilliant. Elsewhere, Leicester-Southampton, on paper an entertaining game. Leeds-Brighton, West Ham-Burnley, Sheffield United-Spurs and Manchester City-Palace. Barry, you're taking 2 weeks off, aren't you?
Yes, a long overdue holiday during which I plan to sit in my house, not speak to anyone and do nothing. I can't wait. It's just going to be the worst 2 weeks off ever.
I presumed it was to spend more time with your son.
Well,
we've had lots of questions about it, about Dylan Glendenning, who was discovered on Tuesday's pod about Brexit. I like we do a whole hour on Brexit and all the minutiae, and we do it in an entertaining, interesting way. And the only thing that people react to is that Barry has a hypothetical 16-year-old son. Mark says, can Jackie give Barry some parenting advice? Dave says, Dylan will inevitably play for Ireland's under-16s up to the under-21s. Then the English FA will discover his grandparents, Max and the current Mrs. Rushton, at which point he'll switch allegiances. Kieran says, has anyone mentioned what position Dylan plays yet? I'm just curious, after the podcast, what positions he plays.
He's kind of a trequartista. Number 10 playmaker.
And Schumann says, does Dylan love his father? Perhaps you'll discover over the next 2 weeks. Anyway, Barry, have a nice break doing absolutely nothing.
Barry, would you like to do some homeschooling? I mean, I've got a couple of options here. If you're bored, you've got 2 weeks all to yourself in your flat, you say, with nothing to do. I mean, I can fix you up over Zoom with a 6-year-old or a 9-year-old. I mean, they'd love to hear from Uncle Barry. If you'd like to help them with their maths or English or geography or science, yeah? Is that all right?
I presume I probably need some sort of certificate from the police or something.
No, it's fine. Just do it. It's fine.
Barry, how would Jackie's children be after 2 weeks in your care?
I'll be honest. I get on great with kids because I find them invariably more entertaining company than many of the adults they happen to live with. I used to babysit for kids for friends on a regular basis and always got on absolutely famously with them, so I think I'd be a good if somewhat lenient and laissez-faire homeschool teacher, and plus the fact I don't actually know anything. I've been watching some of those BBC educational programs that they've put on for kids, and they're absolutely brilliant. There was one about Mars the other day. The planet Mars, not the chocolate bar of the same name. And it was one of the most informative and educational programs I've ever seen, because it was presented by Brian Cox, but sort of aimed at kids, whereas the stuff he does with Darrow Breen that's aimed at grown-ups is too complicated for me, because I just can't get my head around space and what.
What did you learn about Mars then?
Well, I learned that it's 2% comprised of water, despite the fact that there's no evidence of, you know, there aren't lakes or seas or anything. There used to be oceans on Mars. No one quite knows what happened to them. I would recommend that BBC programming to anyone in the UK who might consider themselves a bit thick, as I do.
So in 2 weeks' time, you'll come back with conversational French and trigonometry.
Well, French is one of the few things I was actually good at in school. But yeah, certainly if they can teach me maths, that will be quite an achievement, because that is a subject I was just woeful at.
I look forward to all new intelligent Barry in 2 weeks' time. in the meantime, we'll soldier on without you, Barry. I suspect we'll be absolutely fine. Thank you so much for your time, Ed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you so much.
And some breaking news just in. Ed Ahrens and Jackie Oatley have left the Zoom. Barry and I are just about to record some of those adverts that you love listening to before. I've had some breaking news from Perry Groves here, Barry.
Yes, go on. Is it Percival?
He says, just Perry. Little fat ginger kid called Perry. That was enough. Trust me. Oh, he's a great man, isn't he? We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.